Yeah, I think we should do the podcast like this, Garrett. Like, we can't hear you, but like, you'll just do charades and we'll try and interpret what you're saying about Helldivers 2. No, now you can't hear us either. All right, pure charades from here on out. Go, Garrett.
Hello?
Yeah.
There we go.
Dude, I was kind of impressed. Chris, you're muted.
Wait. Yeah, no, Chris, you're not working.
God damn it. That's all right, the whole show, we're just doing charades. <Yeah. laughs> Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hidden Doors and High Scores, a podcast where three dudes talk about games. I'm Austin.
I'm Garrett.
And I'm Chris. Welcome to the first episode of the new season? Season 3? Or are we counting our year in review episode as that?
I feel like we said that for our year in review episode.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Welcome back again!
Welcome back again. This year, we've decided to switch up the format of the show a little bit. Instead of all of us playing and talking about a single game, we decided that there were way too many games last year that we didn't get to play enough, and it was kind of like mentally exhausting keeping up with the insane release schedule last year, because there's so many good games that came out. So we decided this year we are going to be a little looser and just kind of talk about like the games that we played all month, and we're just going to... It's going to be a bunch of games, and we're going to talk a little, maybe a little less in-depth about them. Just kind of free-form it a little bit so that we can, one, cover more games, and two, make it a little easier on our wallets and our mental health.
And also, this month is going to be extra weird because we didn't do an episode in January other than the year in review. So we're going to do January and February in this episode. This episode is going to be extra mega jam-packed with games.
In our defense, yep. Not a lot came out in January, so we wouldn't have had a lot to talk about anyway. All right, fellas, so what have we been playing?
Well, I was surprised already from the get-go this year with AAA games pretty much dying.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll tell you what we haven't been playing.
Called shitting the bed.
What we haven't been playing is Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League or Skull and Bones, because they're good shows.
I'm looking up online. This can't be real. It says the current Steam player count is 566 players.
Yeah, no, that's right.
566?
There are more players playing each of the Arkham games than are currently playing Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. That's right. That's Arkham insane. Asylum, a game that came out in, what, 2007? 2009, my mistake. But yeah, God, what a disaster for those game.
Just to kind of give that perspective, the average player count of Polyworld, 1,100,446.
Well, their numbers have skyrocketed. I mean, it was high, but their numbers skyrocketed when Nintendo said, oh, we're looking at legal options, right?
Like, yeah.
Just really quickly on the Suicide Squad thing, they released the game early access.
If you paid
got
more.
Early access like 5 days early or something. It was like Monday, mm-hmm. and it was gonna fully launch Friday, and basically nobody could play it for 4 days. That shit was just crazy to me.
Yeah, when you're putting tens of millions of dollars into developing your game, and then you're giving people the option to pay more money, the most diehard of your fans, to play early, and you don't bother to make sure that it's gonna work for them on the day they paid for, like,
yeah,
there's no better way to immediately get a ton of bad reviews and a ton of bad press,
right? Like, and it literally had nothing to do with launch. It had nothing to do with the gameplay or the graphics or the story or anything. It was literally just a launch bug and nobody could play the game.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
But don't worry, they gave them some in-game currency, so all's well.
all six of them that are still playing this game are really gonna be stoked on that.
God, what a disaster.
Yeah, like, not only have a terrible release, but then just have a bad product to back it up. It's not like it was a bad release and it was like, oh, wow, but the game is actually great once you get to it.
Yeah, it genuinely could have recovered if it was a good game, and it's just clearly not. Just really quickly, before we talk about things we actually have been playing, Skull and Bones that we haven't been playing, speaking of concurrent player numbers, there are more concurrent Assassin's Creed Black Flag players
than well, there are that's Solo the insane players. Thing. They're both Ubisoft, right?
Yeah. Yep.
They made a better game about ship fighting years ago.
Yep.
And like, can't, what?
The whole point of Skull and Bones was to expand on just that section of Black Flag.
That's all they need to do is take that thing and make it bigger, and instead they took that thing and made it smaller.
Yeah. Just
they downsized Assassin's Creed for Black Flag's gameplay and got rid of boarding, which is like, by the way, if I'm a pirate, that's the most piratey thing you can do.
The best
is jump onto the enemy ship, cutlass clench between your teeth and say, yar, give me all your booty. And now it's just like, no, you just pull up beside the ship and then a little cutscene plays and it says like, you got 5 barrels of cloth. It's like,
yeah.
God, what a fucking horrible, horrible decision.
And to be honest, we should have known because this game's been delayed for like 5 years at this point. And
but I was hoping that those delays were to do a good like, thing.
We're good, yeah.
Normally, apparently those delays were. Delays. Apparently those delays were. We don't know what the fuck we're doing. Let's fire the development team and rehire a new one, and they can start from scratch.
Well, I was gonna say the perfect segue was from Suicide Squad being like, well, it was a terrible launch. But if the game was good enough, it would have held out. And I think nothing could more perfectly encapsulate that than Helldivers 2. Helldivers 2 is a brand new game that came out in February. And essentially, they were expecting, you know, this is clearly a single A title or a double A title.
Mm-hmm.
And they were expecting a modest player base and people just got hyped as fuck for this game, and so at launch, they just had probably 20 times the amount of players than they were expecting. They had hundreds of thousands of players trying to log in at any given time, and they were not ready with their servers. And so everyone was crashing, people weren't getting experience, all kinds of bad things were happening.
But kudos to them, they fixed it, and they fixed it pretty fast. Which, you can't say the same with AAA titles.
No, and of course, the thing was, the problem was that they weren't ready for the number of players. The problem was not that they had a bad game to start with. They had an amazing game, and now that people can play it, it totally shines through. I've been playing a ton of this game. It is so fun. The theming is just incredible. It's basically Starship Troopers, the game, essentially, like humanity going out there and fighting the bugs. But it's very, like, tongue-in-cheek, like, you have to die for democracy. And there's a general in it named General Brash, and he gives you Brash's tactics, which tell you how to survive. And they're hilarious. The opening cinematic is hilarious. They're all just very tongue-in-cheek about how you're definitely dying for no reason whatsoever. But, you know, give your life for your country, for Super Earth. And it's great. The game is like 4-player co-op. Honestly, it feels a lot like Deep Rock Galactic in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it without the mining, but having the specific goals that you have to do, and also the progression system feels very familiar.
Yeah, you're like slowly unlocking more weapons and new types of armor and silly gestures and emotes and stuff like that. And new things that you can call down from your mothership. You know, you can call down orbital strikes and resupplies of ammo and all that stuff. And you unlock more and more of that as the game goes on.
I will say, in terms of microtransactions, I kind of am on board with their style. So you can pay for currency, but you can also earn that currency and in-game. And the currency doesn't break the game at all.
Well, and at the end of the day, it's PvE. It's PvE, so you're not playing against players, so, like, who cares if the guy that you're on a team with has a slightly better gun than you? Like, great, all the better to kill them damn bugs with.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's super fun. Also, I love, there's kind of a battle pass, but you can just buy it with the in-game currency that you earn from playing the game. So, like, you don't have to spend money to do it. And really, it just gives you more options for more weapons and more armors and things like that.
You can't spend money to get that. That's the medals that you earn. So you have to play the game to do the battle pass.
Right, right. To buy, like, the battle pass, you have to spend the in-game currency. But then, you have to play the game to even use what you get, like, to earn things with the battle pass, basically. But all that is, like, the theming is great, but what makes it fun, actually really similar to what made DRG fun, I think, is the game can go from totally in control to complete fucking mayhem in seconds. And there's all these close calls and just panicked throwing grenades at your feet and just hilarious and
friendly death. Fire that accidental friendly fire.
Oh yeah, calling an airstrike on your friend's head. Absolutely. And it's just hilarious. And it's an absolute blast to play with friends. I can't recommend this game highly enough. If you have a play group, if you have two or three friends who play video games, it's amazing. It's crossplay between PlayStation and PC. Chris, we haven't seen you on there yet.
That's because I haven't bought it yet. And the reason I haven't bought it yet is because, speaking of Deep Rock Galactic, greatest segue of all time, the only game I've been playing all month is Deep Rock Galactic Survivor. It came out February 14th. And yeah, it's just like a Survivor-style game. It's Vampire Survivors, but with a Deep Rock skin. But the thing about it is, they integrated more of the Deep Rock Galactic stuff into it. So basically the way the game works is every dive is a deep dive, like in Deep Rock Galactic. So there's four levels and then a fifth boss level, a dreadnought level. And so like once you get to the boss level, you kind of like want to go around, like make like a safe path for you to run around the map once the dreadnought comes out, because it's going to take you a while to kill it.
Do they have the four character types?
Yes.
Like the classes?
Yeah, and they are... so crazy, like it's crazy how different they are in a game that is essentially just an auto shooter, because like you don't press any buttons, all you do is move, and they mine automatically when you run at a wall, they shoot automatically, but the weapons that each of them start with are different, and the upgrades they can get are different, and the like you at certain level progressions, you unlock new weapons, so you end up having four weapons that are constantly auto-firing. Like,
cool.
But so, like, the, you know, the scout gets the assault rifle and the sniper rifle, and the engineer gets a bunch of turrets that you can upgrade in different ways that, like, either stay behind you, or, like, you can upgrade them to follow you around, and they do different, like, damage types. Like, I've been really impressed with how fun each of the different characters are.
Yeah, that's really important to a game like that. It was one of the things that I felt like was most lacking in Vampire Survivors. I really enjoyed Vampire Survivors, but
the classes felt the same.
Yeah, all the characters, it's just like, oh, they just basically start with a different weapon, but it's like, okay, but
you can get that weapon immediately.
Right, 2 minutes into the game, it's like, well, I still have 10 books around me and garlic, and I'm throwing axes. So it's like, the fact that I started with a bone instead of a magic wand, like, meh.
There is crossover, but not a ton of it.
Now, I know it's a Survivor game, and therefore it's single player, but it hurts my heart to see a Deep Rock game without co-op, because, like, that's the heart of Deep Rock.
I know, and again, it's early access, and, like, we'll see if they put co-op in. I don't know that co-op would significantly change the gameplay, to be honest. You'd have to make the maps a lot bigger, because they wouldn't fit two people. Anyway, that's basically the only thing I've been playing all month, except for obviously Elden Ring in preparation for 4 months from now when Shadow of the Erdtree comes out.
I'm getting my
roly-poly timing back.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm gonna be so bad when I start again. But dude, there's a shitload of good games this month. At least that I've been playing this month, and I've been stoked.
I mean, you guys were talking about roguelikes. Did you guys play RoboQuest at all?
Hell yeah.
It's like Hades in a way. After every section you go through, you can pick upgrades based on the build you're going for. And there's six classes total, but it's kind of like Returnal in the sense that it becomes a bullet hell towards the end of the game.
I think more so on the Hades side than the Returnal side. Like, this game has really got, like, heart. It's got, like, it was made with love, and, like, it's cute and fun, and you can tell that the people who made it just, like, really enjoyed throwing in little silly things here and there. Its art style is interesting. It's kind of like Borderlands.
Mm-hmm. The cell shading,
kind of vibe to it. But I think the combat feels more like Doom to me. Like, it's first-person shooter, but it's very fast-paced and frantic. And, like, there's a shitload of enemies everywhere, and they're all shooting at you, and you gotta just constantly keep moving to not die. And
the combat keeps expanding, because you keep getting, like, hidden items that change up the way you fight in gameplay. with cooldowns and all kinds of wacky stuff that you can do.
Yeah, and it's got similar, like, the Borderlands kind of weapon mods kind of thing. Like, every time you find a gun, it's going to have three or four things on it, and one of them might be 15% faster reload speed, and one of them might be every time you so there's a lot of RNG, but there's a lot of RNG sort of guardrails. There's, like, every time you finish a level, there's, like, lots of perks that you can buy, and you can choose what you want to get, and so you can kind of move your build towards your gun or towards your perks or whatever to try and make things work for you.
And you can level up your town to give you even more options, each one of those like safety zones to increase your chances of getting a build you kind of specifically want to go that round.
Yeah, I think they did an incredible job with the sort of roguelike permanent progress system, where every time you do a run, you get some resource, you get wrenches, and you can slowly use those to upgrade sort of permanent abilities for your character or for the world, and push, which allows you to push farther and explore more and do more things. Yeah, I think the game really rewards you for playing different characters and doing different things. And the combat's like very, very polished. It's very, very smooth.
And it's co-op.
It's
who doesn't want another co-op game?
Well, and it's but you don't have to play co-op. Single player is a great experience. Totally fun to play single player, and then just an absolute blast to play with a friend in two-player co-op. It's got a banging soundtrack. Fucking great. Kind of like Doom again. And if you have Xbox/PC Game Pass, it's free. So can't beat the price on that. Honestly, even if you don't have those, it's $25. And if this at all sounds like it's in your wheelhouse, absolutely worth $25, I think.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, tons and tons of fun. I've been playing it a ton with a bunch of our friends, whoever's online, and I'm very close to beating the game. I haven't beaten it yet, but I've gotten to the final level several times.
I finally beat it before Final Fantasy.
Nice, and congrats. I
all my time towards Final Fantasy.
I know, it's like RoboQuest and Helldivers are kind of on pause because now I just want to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And that feels like a good a segue as any. Let's talk about Rebirth.
Oh my god, I was expecting that game to be great and it surpassed everything I was expecting. That game is goofy, wacky as shit. There are so many different games in that game that are all fun.
Dude, that was one thing. That's something that I kept running into. I'm not as far as you are, but that's something that I really like. That I kind of had forgotten about the original 1997 game, even though I loved that game. I'd kind of forgotten how many stupid, silly mini games there were in it. And then I started playing this game and I started seeing stupid mini games. And I was like, oh my god, I forgot. I forgot that this is like a big part of Final Fantasy VII. And they're great.
A ton of games.
They're great. Like, they just did a really good job making short, simple little mini games that are a fun little diversion from, you know, the general RPG combat and story kind of grind, if you will. And they nailed it. I really think they nailed it. I haven't gotten that far in the game. I'm probably 4 hours in, 5 hours in.
Have you played Queen's Blood, the card game?
Yes, I love it. I think it's really interesting.
Shockingly good. That would be a fun game on its own.
It's kind of like Gwent in The Witcher 3, where you're like, this game was already incredible, and then you just, like, built a perfectly viable card game inside it, and, like, well fucking done. Oh, the first thing I did when I got into the first town, and they were like, hey, here's this deck of this game you could play. I'm like, oh, I'm playing everyone in town I can play. That's the first thing I'm doing.
I'm buying all the cards I can do. I'm playing everyone to get new cards.
Yep, so excited.
Anytime there's a new challenger in the game, I'm like, great, I'll take a break, play some Queen's Blood.
Yeah, Queen's Blood, that's what it's called. Nice. And yeah, I don't know, I haven't gotten too far in the game, so, you know, I can't speak too much to, like, plot-wise, but I was just saying, like, the big open world and the sort of side quests I've seen so far have been really excellent. Bringing back characters from the first game, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and reminding us of their fun, quirky, weird-ass fucking personalities. And I can tell already I'm going to 100% this game. I'm feeling it in my bones.
100% on each area as I go.
They make the areas really fun to explore, and they give you clear direction of, like, where the important shit is to go. You know, there's markers on your mini-map or whatever. and like you can still go out and just explore the world and like, you know, kill monsters and shit, but like they've given you a direction to go if you don't want to just wander aimlessly.
And I will say the game is hard. I'm playing on normal, I'm not on hard. This game fucking, it gets rough.
Yeah, I even fairly early in the game, there were some enemies that I was like, oh wow, this is not fucking around. Like, it's much yeah. harder than it is in any other sort of action hack and slashy kind of mm-hmm. game. This game takes from that original blueprint of combat of the original 1997, you know, turn-based RPG, and it still kind of builds that in with like the action gauge and with the fact that like enemies just do big wide attacks, and like your best option is just fucking block and just take as little damage as you
or
can.
Or there's defensive moves that you can like counter dodge. Like there's all kinds of things that are built into the game to help you with.
Absolutely. And it's super satisfying to do that shit. So they made your inputs in real time very worthwhile. But yeah, like sometimes the enemy's just gonna hurt you and it's okay. Like you can do the best you can in countering that. I think the combat also took a big step forward when they focused on character synergies. I really like that as a sort of focus yes. of the combat. So now, like, as your characters do their sort of normal special moves, I don't know what you call them, they're moves that you have to use a bar of the ATB, that adds to, like, a synergy sort of meter. And if two of your characters have gotten enough in their synergy meter, they can do, like, a cool combined attack together that... it kicks ass, and you could like level those up and like make them better.
It's
and
great because it forces you to keep moving and cycling through characters, which is how the game is meant to be played.
Yeah.
Whereas some people just think like, oh, I'm going to play Cloud and I'm just always going to be Cloud and let these guys attack in the background. You're just not doing enough damage if you do it that way. You need to learn that mechanic early because you're going to have to know it.
But yeah, the world is beautiful. The characters feel fully realized. It's quirky and it really feels like they brought the world to life in a way that I'm very, mm-hmm. very impressed by.
And the world is huge. This feels like a full RPG. Like this could be a solo RPG the whole way through. And it's part two of a part three series, which is wild to me. I can't believe it.
I do have some sad Final Fantasy news.
Oh.
Nobuo Uematsu, who is the main composer for Final Fantasy, completely composed the first 9 Final Fantasy wow. games, I want to say, and then composed the main themes for every other Final Fantasy game, as well as lots of other games, is retiring because of health concerns.
Did he do this game?
He wrote the main theme for this game.
Okay.
And for, what was the first half of this called? Remake. He did the main theme for that as well. He's actually not retiring from like composing altogether, just as he's retiring from like full soundtrack compositions. I guess he just says he doesn't have enough energy to do like 2 or 3 years full bore.
Well, if he was composing the first Final Fantasy game, he's probably fucking old.
I mean, he's up there. He's 60 or 70 or something like that. But he just, you know, I guess he did a game with a couple of the other Final Fantasy developers for Apple Arcade a couple years ago and just decided that was his last game that he was going to do. And said he's still going to be involved with the Final Fantasy compositions, but probably is not going to be, probably going to go in a new musical direction from here.
Ooh.
Well, the music in Final Fantasy Rebirth is extremely varied and excellent. I would highly recommend listening to the soundtrack.
He only composed the main theme, and there were a bunch of different composers that did the rest of the music.
Okay, so that makes sense, because you get wild techno to beautiful orchestral, like, it's all over the place.
Dude, the Chocobo Farm music is so fucking weird.
There's so many variations on that same fucking song.
Yeah.
Well, we can't talk about games that came out in January and February without talking about Pow World, I think.
Yeah, true. Talk about it.
I don't know how much you guys have played it, but I think Garrett played it a lot more than Austin and I did.
Yeah, but like I played it for 2 days really hard and then kind of fell off. It wasn't my thing, but like I can see why if you had a big group of people playing together, survival games are just fun. And then you do Pokemon, throw it in. Sorry, not Pokemon, Pals.
Yeah.
Nintendo, don't sue me.
TM.
The last time we saw each other in person, we were talking about it a little bit, I guess. But Austin and I don't know if this has changed for you. It hasn't changed for me. We were both saying, like, we played it and, like, did through the tutorial and, like, played a session. And was like, all right, that was fun. And, like, went and played some other stuff. And then just never felt like going back to it, you know? Like, it just didn't grab me. I wanted to play Deep Rock Survivor. I wanted to play Elden Ring. I wanted to play RoboQuest. I wanted to play anything except Power World. Like, it just never drew me back in. And I don't know if that's just because I didn't play it far enough to, like, really get to the fun part, but, like,
no, I'm totally with you, Chris. Like, there was nothing out during that time too, so I was like, I really had nothing to play, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna fire back up Elden Ring.
Yeah, well, and that was the thing, is like, that was
Pally World.
That was the discussion we were having. I mean, this was 3 weeks ago, yeah. And we were talking about, do we put out an episode this month, and we said no, because the only thing that came out was Pal World, and we didn't really want to play it.
Yeah, I did fall off after basically playing one long session with a couple, with Garrett and our buddy Matt. I'm not a big fan of the survival crafting genre generally, but, you know, if you get a group of people and you're working together, you can have some fun with it. Like, I had a ton of fun playing Valheim with a group. I never enjoyed playing Valheim solo, and I think Power World was kind of the same. It was like, I enjoyed playing it with two other people. When it came time to boot up my PC, that was not the game I was going to play solo. And then when RoboQuest and Helldivers both dropped and my friends were playing those, like, well, I'd rather play those than Pal World with my friends. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm the opposite. I think I don't particularly like co-op survival crafting. I think part of the survival bit to me is that you're on your own and you can't really rely on anybody else to help you. I mean, that's why I like Subnautica so much, was that, like, it really makes you feel the fear of not being able to survive on your own, you know? Yeah. And like that like visceral feeling is so important to me in a survival crafting game. And I just didn't feel that in Pal World, and I didn't feel like the crafting was very well-rounded or smooth or anything. And like,
I mean, I feel like in Pally World, you do need a team, because if you're going to be Ash, I need a Brock and Misty with me.
Yeah. wait, no. It's
sorry.
I just never wanted to go back. I never wanted to do that more than I wanted to do anything else.
Yep. I feel the same way.
I totally get why it's super popular.
No, I don't think it's badly designed.
Also, they don't need our endorsement. They made their fucking
for
money.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. They're good. Also, that is free on Game Pass. So if you like survival crafters, totally worth checking out. And also, I think they did something really smart with Pal World, which is, I think part of survival crafting that some people really don't like is the sort of monotonous upkeep in terms of, you know, farming or cooking the food or whatever. Like, people like building their base, and people like going out and getting the new resources in the combat. But in terms of like the sort of upkeep of cutting the grass and harvesting the mushrooms and cooking them over the fire and whatnot, that's kind of boring bullshit that you have to do. And Pal World just made it so that you can make the Pokemon do all of that shit for you.
The pals.
Sorry. What did I say? I meant pals. And they do all the farming shit for you, and that removes a lot of the monotony from the game. And so I think that was a really genius move on their part, so you as a player can focus on exploration and base building instead of you know, sitting there for 15 minutes cooking all your turnip soups.
I have Subnautica 3 news.
All right, talk about Subnautica 3.
All right, everybody who listened to this podcast for 1 second knows I'm a massive Subnautica fan. I talk about it all the time. 'Twas suggested that Subnautica 3 was not in development, but like pre-development, like they're hiring a development team for it. And there was some consternation among the Subnautica fandom because the details in that report describing the game seemed to suggest that they were trying to make Subnautica a live service game.
Oh.
And that obviously would be very terrible. Most live service games are. although, I mean, admittedly, there are a few of them that do it right, but Subnautica as a live service game would be fucking horrific. I can't even imagine it. And Unknown Worlds came out and said, that is absolutely not going to be a thing. And then in that same announcement, they announced that there's going to be news about Subnautica 3 coming sometime in 2024. So the game is not going to come out this year. Early Access not even going to launch this year. There's just going to be news this year, and I'm very excited about it.
Great. I have a little news.
Yeah.
So Shadow of the Erdtree is coming out June 21st.
Oh, so excited.
So excited. Mm-hmm. The director of the game has come out and said that it will have a Sekiro-like leveling system in the DLC. So if you have a crazy high-level character, you're not just going to steamroll it. And yeah. I'm interested to see how they do that. I wonder if it'll be like Wulong, where you kind of like level through the level and get your levels based on that. I don't know. I don't know what that means, but I'm excited.
Making it Sekiro style makes me think that it's going to be harder. Like, it's going to be harder the higher level you are, obviously, but like significantly harder if you're in like new game,
plus. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
all Dark Souls DLCs have always been the hardest part of every one of the games. So
I also read that it's going to be locked behind the Millennia boss fight. So you have to beat Millennia to be able to access it.
Oh, that makes sense. She's like at the roots of the Erdtree, right?
Oh, also, most important, I just saw this today, news about Elden Ring. Let Me Solo Her announced his retirement.
I saw that too.
Unless, wow. Unless there's a new boss even harder in the DLC, which means he's going to play in the DLC.
Man, yeah, of course. What a hero. What an absolute hero.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us here at Hidden Doors and High Scores. Thank you for listening. Let us know if you like the new format. This one's going to be extra long. I think our future episodes will be a lot tidier than this. But if you like more of this free form, sort of shooting the shit and talking about lots of games format, we'd love to hear it. And until next time, I'm Austin.
I'm Garrett.
And I'm Chris. You can find us at HDHS Gaming on all the social media platforms. Make sure to check us out on Twitch, see what we're playing and talking about. Come and join us on Discord. We hang out and play games every night. We're always happy to have more gamers on the server. All those links will be in the show notes for this episode. And lastly, if you like this podcast, tell a friend or give us a rating. Both of those really help us out. And we would really appreciate it.
Well, also, bye.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do that.
See you later.
And don't forget to give all those babs.
Oh, my God.
Has a red hat.